How's it going, everybody? It is 5:30 Thursday afternoon, and that means it's time for the last trip in 2018 down the homeward path. This is the show by me, Adam, and MTG Dad. For all of you at home, the moms and dads, and even the single people, I'm not exclusive in any way, shape, or form. All of you who are trying to play Magic the way that I do, where we're on a budget, whether it's our time or our finances. So this week, we got to see our first preview. As of this recording, we have 4 of the 5 mechanics revealed. And, some of them look really strong. Like, really, really strong. And then, piggybacking off of looking at these mechanics, just breaking them down for what they are, I'm also going to be going through the process that I tend to use a lot, which is looking back to look forward, which with the end of the year on the horizon, this is going to be the last episode I do for 2018. I thought it would be appropriate. And before I can move on with that, I've got to thank the people who make this show possible. Again, I wouldn't be able to do this without support from the network over at ConstructedCriticism.com. The content on that network is fantastic, and I am still... I will never not be honored to be a part of this. And even if, for whatever reason, they decide that they no longer want me to be a part of it, I will always be honored for having been a part of it. So, you know, from the bottom of my heart, still to this day, thank you for the opportunity that you have given me. And I hope I am doing you proud. Speaking of somebody doing you proud, check out our sponsor over at inkgaming.com. You can use our promo code CCMTG10 and get 10% off your order of playmats, deck boxes, sleeves, gaming cases, I mean, dice bags, all kinds of stuff. And it'll do you proud because it's going to make your stuff look cool. So... And if you want to support the show directly, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. I appreciate the contributions of the patrons so far. We are pushing $20 on our goal to help with the entry fee for Magic Fest Memphis in February. So I appreciate the contributions to that. Remember, the show's always going to be free, but if you feel like you are getting something back out of it and you want to donate to help me help the show, please feel free to do so. So, without any further ado, let's dive right in. We got some mechanics this week, and Ravnica Allegiances looks downright silly. I'm not going to say it's not a broken set by any stretch, but there are some very powerful cards in the work here. If not traditionally powerful, like I don't see anything resembling a Scarab God yet. Give it time, I'm sure, but... It looks like a set that's going to have a pretty high power scale. Like, just going to have some stuff going on. So I want to look at the mechanics first. Because, again, while Mark Rosewater would disagree with me, one of the things I always look for in Ravnica is the mechanics. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, it's an episode of his Drive to Work podcast when he was talking about the design and guilds of Ravnica, where he said, players don't remember the mechanics of Ravnica. I kind of do. Transmute was the first Ravnica mechanic I really got to break. So there's always going to be a soft spot in my heart for Ravnica mechanics. But I digress. The first one we got was, what was it? It was Spectacle. We got our first look at Spectacle, which is the Rakdos mechanic this time around. Historically, I mean, Black and Red have had some weird ones in the past. There's been some duds, for sure. They had Hellbent was the original, which rewarded you for having no cards in your hand, a mechanic that would later be adopted by Yu-Gi-Oh!, ironically enough, and to, like, bordering on broken success in that game because of how that game plays. But again, we're straying off topic like I'm prone to do. Then we got Unleash, which was a welcome change from Hellbent. It got captured the flavor of the Rakdos, which is just wild, crazy, aggressive, you know, smashing stuff, getting into everything, you know, making trouble for everybody else with the unleash mechanic, which, you know, the unleash mechanic perfectly captured the flavor of doing whatever you want with little regard to yourself, because you could make your creatures bigger at the cost of never being able to block with them. And for Rakdos aggro decks, that was just like, sign me up, I'm ready to, you know, shut up and take my money. I'm all in on this, right? You know, math is for blockers, and blocking is for when you're losing. So, in this set, we get another mechanic that seems to lend itself really, really well to the aggressive strategy in the form of Spectacle. Spectacle references the mechanic that Rakdos Lord of Riots himself had, which was to, you know, do something if an opponent lost life this turn. It's similar to Bloodthirst in that regard, but instead of it being 1-1 counters or anything like that, inherently, you get an alternate cost for your cards if an opponent lost life this turn. And the poster child for this mechanic is going to be Light Up the Stage, which just looks like a very, very, very good Magic card at 1 mana when you pay its Spectacle cost. And not for nothing, aggressive decks, generally speaking, unless you're casting something that wants to, you know, casting something that's going to change how combat goes, you generally in your aggressive decks want to cast your spells after you've attacked if you have the opportunity. Because you want your opponent to interact with what they know about, and then you, knowing what you know about the removal that they have, or used or didn't use, based on the situation, you can make an informed decision about what you want to cast post-combat. Well, that's when Spectacle cards are going to be at their strongest, because your opponent will conceivably have lost some life. And we also have cards like Fanatical Firebrand, Vyashino Pyromancer, you know, cards that give you the ability to cause your opponents to lose life, to say nothing of what we're going to get in the set. Like, that's another big possibility. But in particular, Light Up the Stage looks really strong because 1 mana draw 2 is basically what it reads. You exile the top 2 cards of your library for its casting cost is 2 and a red, and then its spectacle cost is just a red. Exile the top 2 cards of your library until the end of your next turn, you can play these cards. So you literally get 2 extra cards for the next, whatever's left of this turn and your next one. That's really strong. Like, it's reasonable at 3 mana. It's like a red divination. It's the reddest divination I've ever seen. But then when you reduce that cost by 2, it's just really strong. And then they have an appropriately named card, and for the life of me, I can't remember the first part of the name, but it has the word Reveler in its name, and nothing could be more accurate. It is a 2-1 for, I believe, 1 and a red. And its spectacle cost is 2, a black and a red. So, spectacle doesn't always represent a cost reduction. In this case, it kind of functions like Surge. Sometimes you'll get to just cast something for a cheaper cost. Sometimes you'll get a benefit from casting it for a higher cost. So in the case of this Reveler, it's a 2-1 or a 2-2. I'm a little hazy on the details, and I'm driving, so I can't really pull it up. But when it enters the battlefield, you can discard a card. If you do, draw a card, which is reasonable on an aggressive red creature. Like, sometimes you get into the middle of the game, you get a bunch of land stuck in your hand, you can run it out there. It's not embarrassing to run it out there for 2 mana. You know, turn an excess land or an Arclight Phoenix in your hand into more cards. But you also have the spectacle mode on it. When it enters the battlefield, if its spectacle cost was paid, Bedlam Reveler. Discard your hand, draw 3 cards. That's really strong in an aggressive Rakdos shell. Like, really strong. And then considering how easy it is to make your opponents lose life in a mono-red deck, just splashing that creature at the top of your curve seems reasonable. The ability to get an extra body out, you know, you get more card draw. It's just like a Bedlam Reveler. And that looks really exciting. I know it's a 4-mana Bedlam Reveler, but that's not terrible. That's an appropriately costed Bedlam Reveler for Standard, even though original Bedlam Reveler was never very good in Standard. That's because of the spells we had, not because the card was bad. So, I digress. Moving on, the next mechanic we got was Afterlife. It's the Orzhov mechanic. And looking at the past history of Orzhov mechanics, they've been kind of all over the place. It's really hard to kind of capture the flavor of the guild and their mechanics, because they went from Haunt, which is where when your creature died or you cast a spell with Haunt, you would exile that thing, haunting a target creature. And then when the haunted target died, you got to do whatever that creature or that spell did again. So creatures with Haunt had Enter the Battlefield abilities, and then spells with Haunt you would get to cast again. But I was never very high on Haunt. It was kind of a medium mechanic, and most of the benefits you got from Orzhov were just from having good mana and playing aggressive black and white creatures together. And what ultimately became kind of the identity that they pushed for in this set was the deck that grew out of Orzhov in original Kamigawa Ravnica 9th edition Standard, which was Ghost Husk, kind of the original Aristocrats deck. And then, of course, we had RTR. The Orzhov mechanic was Extort, and even still, the deck that played Orzhov colors that did the most was the Aristocrats, a deck that wanted to sacrifice its own creatures for value. So it seems like with this set, Wizards decided to listen, and they made the Orzhov mechanic about sacrificing your creatures for value, because that's what Afterlife does. When a creature with Afterlife dies, you create a number of 1/1 white spirit tokens with flying equal to that creature's Afterlife number. So it's Afterlife and a number. The only cards we've seen previewed so far have Afterlife 1. And when they die, they'll create a Lingering Souls token. And that doesn't seem terrible. One of them in particular seems really nice. Spells your opponents cast during your turn and abilities your opponents cast during your turn cost one more, and it's a bear. You know, it's a 2-2 for one, a 2-2 for two that creates a 1/1 flyer when it dies. And then we already have Doom Dissenter. I'm branching into my next topic on that, but the long and short of it is Orzhov finally got the Aristocrats mechanic because players have been using them as the Aristocrats guild forever anyway. And then our Simic mechanic is a retread. It's not necessarily a full-on returning mechanic, but it is a revamp of a mechanic that we've seen before. In this case, it's called Adapt, and it's a retraining of Monstrosity. Now, the original Simic mechanics, we had Graft, which was a little bit complex. You could move creatures off of your Graft creatures onto other creatures when those creatures entered the battlefield. And then we got Evolve, which we basically got again when they printed Pelt Collector in Guilds. Evolve was every time a creature with greater power or toughness entered the battlefield, you could put a +1/+1 counter on the creature with Evolve. And then you would have some benefit to putting counters on a creature or some benefit by, you know, some form of evasion, whatever the case may be. You know, there was a lot of relevant things to do with Evolve cards. Cloudfin Raptor is one of my favorite Magic cards ever, largely because of how good it was in Limited, but it had its place in Standard, and it was kind of just a fun Magic card. And of course, Experiment 1 leading to shenanigans in Modern eventually, and to a greater extent during its run in Standard, combining with cards like Burning Tree Emissary and the like. Just really exciting stuff. And then the mechanic we get now kind of lets Simic get a mana sink, finally. Adapt, again, is literally Monstrosity. If the creature does not have any +1/+1 counters on it, you can pay the cost next to the adapt and adapt it. It will get however many +1/+1 counters, adapt in a number. It will get that many +1/+1 counters. The difference between it and monstrous is there is no issue where you have to try to remember whether or not you've used it yet. Because the qualifying text is not if this creature isn't adapted, it's if this creature doesn't have any +1/+1 counters on it. Which is, first of all, a much cleaner interpretation of the mechanic, and second of all, it's just a, it just fits with the flavor of the Simic using those +1/+1 counters in other places. You know, you can pull them off and move them to other creatures or other permanents, and then be able to put them back on later with more mana. So I thought that was, while maybe a little bit of a cop-out for a mechanic, it's a very well-done retread. And it's an implementation that isn't completely out of line based on the identity of the guild over the years. And then as of recording today, the last mechanic we have is Riot for the Gruul. So the one we're waiting on today, Thursday afternoon, is the Azorius mechanic. We don't know what Blue-White's doing yet. The rumor had it we're getting a returning mechanic, but it's also possible that they considered adapt a returning mechanic. So I wouldn't get too hyped about the possibility of the return of Forecast or Detain yet. I'll believe it when I see the cards on that axis. But Riot is just a really appealing mechanic for me. Gruul, creatures in Gruul with Riot enter the battlefield with either a +1/+1 counter or haste. Your choice. That's what Riot does. And that is really appealing to me. It's like everything that was wrong with Unleash and everything that was wrong with something like Tribute, they were both fixed on the same mechanic. Because Unleash caused you to have to forego the ability to play defensively, and you don't have to do that. If you want your creatures to come out faster, they can come out faster. If you want them to come out bigger, they come out bigger. You don't have to choose between the two. And the card that we got spoiled today, again, can't remember the exact name, but it is a 3-drop, 1 a green and a red for a 3/3, with Trample and Riot. As long as it's your turn, you and this creature have hexproof. That is really strong in a format that might end up being defined by Settle the Wreckage. There, between cards like Shalai, Voice of Plenty, Siren Storm Tamer, Wizard's Retort, Admiral's Order, and now this thing, Spellbreaker Shaman, we're going to call it because I can't remember the name. There's a lot of ways to not get blown to pieces by Settle the Wreckage. So after they printed the card, and the card ended up being a cornerstone of the Blue-White Control deck, they have gone to great lengths to make that card harder to justify including. I like that. And I really like this mechanic. The Riot mechanic is everything I could ask for as somebody who loves modal spells and modal abilities. I like having choices. I like getting the opportunity to really find out if I'm getting the most from my cards. So I am really stoked for this Gruul mechanic. And that wraps up the initial round of reaction to Ravnica Allegiance's spoilers. Again, all I really wanted to talk about in that regard was the mechanics themselves. So let's piggyback off of that, and let's talk about something that I do pretty frequently when it comes to a format that's about to shift, and even during a format that we're going through right now that looks ironically pretty similar to others that I've played in. I've said it several times that this format reminds me a lot of the very first standard format that I ever played. And that format was Kamigawa Block, Ravnica Block, and 9th Edition. RavKami 9 for short, as I refer to it a lot. And the similarities are pretty easy to spot. There were green-black X mid-range decks just about everywhere. There were green-white X tokens and mid-range decks everywhere initially. There were some aggressive red decks, although at the time they were Boros aggro, like proper, not white weenie with a red splash or mono red with a light white splash. There were some kind of slightly bigger creature decks. And then we had a tap out control deck that came to be one of the fixtures of the format. And would you look at what we got right now? We have some aggressive red decks. We have some aggressive white decks. We have some green-white tokens decks. We have some green-white mid-range decks. We have some green-black X mid-range decks. We have some blue-black X mid-range decks, which are decidedly different in scope. That's kind of the outlier here. And then we have the blue tempo decks. Be they Is It Drake or... English is failing me right now, I'm sorry. Be they Is It Drake or the actual like mono blue tempo with Siren Storm Tamer and Curious Obsession and all that jazz. You know, whatever the case may be, this format has shook out very similar to my very first standard. And going into the next set, we're getting a lot of the same guilds that we got last time, going into the second set. So when Ravnica, it was literally Ravnica City of Guilds, the Kamigawa Block 9th edition, that's what that format looked like. Well, then once we added Guild Pack to the mix and we picked up Godless Shrine, Stomping Ground, and Steam Vents, the blue-red control decks became more defined. The biggest difference here is instead of the blue-red control decks becoming defined, it'll probably be the blue-white control decks that become much more defined. But the tap-out control decks, we started to see kind of a splintering off in the control deck family. That was a standard format that featured the Tron lands, and Tron was a blue control deck back then. I know that sounds crazy and awful, but it was actually a very fun deck to play. You didn't have turn 3 Karn in Tron, you had turn 3 Kaga. Kaga was just better than anything else anybody was doing it, you know, turn 3. You were just casting a 5-5 dragon that took their best thing when they killed it. Or you were casting, you know, a bunch of card draw and you would eventually find either a wildfire or just a giant X burn spell pointed at their head. Or invoke the Firemind and draw yourself a ton of cards. Or Tidings and draw 4 cards and still be able to leave up counter magic. Like, Tron was a fun deck at the time. Now, we're not going to have anything like that in this standard. We don't have like a big mana control deck. But the tap-out control deck at the time carries a lot of parallels to what we're doing in standard right now. Because they wanted to cast 6 mana dragons that were just really, really strong cards. Namely, Kaga the Tidestar, Yosei the Morningstar. In our current standard, we have Niv-Mizzet. And we have Teferi, who is an honorary dragon, in this case, anyway. But we have Niv-Mizzet, who's this lovely 6-mana dragon that absolutely dominates a game if you're allowed to untap with it. Similar things happen when you are allowed to untap with Kaga and Yosei. So the parallels are there. The thing to look for going into this new format, or going into the new set, is the same thing that we ended up having to look for when Guild Pack came into standard. When Guild Pack came into standard, the Pro Tour for Guild Pack was utterly dominated by aggressive decks, despite the fact that so many players locked themselves into a beach house in Honolulu and brewed up what they thought was the aggro-killing masterpiece in a black-green-white mid-range deck. But several players caught wind of this project and tuned their aggro decks. They made them even lower to the ground, did a good job of both removing blockers and just finding ways to not care about the things the mid-range decks were doing. And ultimately, the event was taken down. That first Pro Tour was taken down by an aggressive green-red deck that was built specifically with the kinds of mid-range technology people were playing in mind. to the point that Mark Herberholz was playing a card like Moldervine Cloak in his green-red aggro deck. Now, again, we don't have all the cards yet, so I don't know how similar these things are going to be. But I can't imagine this being a situation where something similar doesn't shake out. Riot is a very powerful, aggressive mechanic, and it does a really good job in this in one regard, because it gives you the ability to build an aggro deck that's really good at beating up on other, doing what your aggro deck's supposed to do, get on the ground, get after them fast, beat them up a little bit, and then clean them up with whatever burn you're playing. Like, you can still do that. But you've also got the benefit of, with Riot, you can go bigger than the other aggro decks. So in that regard, it almost feels like the capability to build a Zoo deck. And Zoo was the number two deck at that Pro Tour, beating up on Boros deck wins most of the event because its creatures were bigger. Creatures like Watch Wolf and Scab Clan Mauler with Bloodthirst and Curd Ape and Burning Tree Shaman with Rumbling Slum in the sideboard for even bigger. Like, these were all very good Magic cards. So, getting any number of good aggressive drops in green and red, and even just adding solid mana to the drops we already have, could potentially set up a similar styled deck for success. And then I would be silly if I didn't mention what came to utterly dominate that format during the summer at the PTQ level and at the regional level and the championship qualifier level, which was Ghost Husk, the original Aristocrats deck, because it had the capability to just kill you out of nowhere if you made a mistake in blocking. If you decided, they don't have enough stuff on the board to really worry about, they could just swing in with a Nantuko Husk, and you're like, they're not going to sack their whole board. And then you would, get Promise of Bunray to trigger and make four more creatures, and then you would sacrifice those creatures before damage and just actually kill your opponent. But not just that, you also had the capacity to play a regular fair game of Magic with Dark Confidant and Duress and Castigate and Removal and, whatever else you were trying to do to interact. Like, it was a deck that just, it was really, really well-built, well-tuned. You got a lot of value out of sacrificing your own creatures, and then you also had these, like, fair, reasonable Magic cards that you could fall back on. Again, I don't think that's something that's going to be different this time around. We're in a very similar format. So, I mean, that's really the long and short of it. This format feels eerily similar to one that I've played before. So I think we would be foolish to not kind of look into that format, the context of the things that were going on in it, the kinds of things players were doing to combat that, and just see if maybe there's some parallels we can draw. So that's going to wrap it up this week and this year. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to reach out to the show, if you have suggestions on ways to improve the show in the future, if you want to apply to be a co-host, don't laugh too much at that. It may be something I'm looking into. I'm going to be doing some field testing over the next 2 weeks, but there might be that possibility that somebody would be able to join the show. I don't know yet. That's something I'm really going to have to think about, and something I'm going to have to test this app that I've found. But if you wanna contact the show, you can do so on Twitter at HomewardPathMTG. You can hit me on Facebook. My name is Adam Spain. You can join one of the Facebook groups, either the Constructive Criticism family or the Homeward Pathfinders. Those are for the network and for the show respectively. They are open invite. All you have to do is click join, and we will screen you real quick and more than likely add you. Personally, I have not denied anybody yet. So there's that. But the other thing you can do if you want to get in touch with the show, if you want to make my week, is you can send me tweets with the hashtag MTG Dad Jokes. Now, I am a dad. I'm getting ready to have baby number three. We found out it's a boy for the interested parties. And dad life is kind of taking over. So with dad life comes a propensity for dad jokes, because you got to tell jokes your kids can laugh at and that maybe they won't repeat in polite company. So the only one I had for this week that I can find is from Rachel Agnes or at Baytog on Twitter. Said, how do Tron players get turn three natural Tron every game? Says, easy. They believe in the heart of the Karns. Heart of the Karns. Somebody who came from Yu-Gi-Oh! To Magic again a few years ago. I can wholeheartedly respect that tweet. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you have a good holiday season. I've got a little bit of a hectic holiday schedule. I'm off for 5 days from work, but I've got a holiday trip to see my brother on Saturday. I got the family that we're trying to help in the Hart family that we're trying to help. I made a tweet about it not that long ago. I'm going to be taking what we have gotten donated for them on Monday. And then my mom's Christmas Eve is Monday night. And then my family Christmas in Kentucky is Tuesday. And then I go back to work Wednesday. So just not a lot of time to rest. And it gives me a chance to really kind of reformulate the show and figure out what I want to do next year. So thanks for listening. I hope you have a good holiday season. I cannot express my gratitude for your listening over the last 20 weeks enough. I really mean it, everybody. Thank you so much. This year has been really special to me because of the amount of feedback that I've gotten, because of the engagement that I've gotten from people that have been listening. There's nothing that makes me happier than seeing a message from a listener. So thanks. Keep at it. And maybe I'll catch you on Arena. Who knows? If you play against Homeward Path, yes, it's that one. And until then, have fun.